Major Ed Dames with us, the remote viewer. We're going to take calls with Ed and continue chatting with him about some of the incredible things that he has seen and witnessed in his career. We'll be back with him and you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Major Ed Dames with us, the remote viewer, still teaching courses. You've got another seminar coming up next year, Ed, don't you?
It's a seminar, but I do want to talk to you about that, but there's something I really want to get in about remote viewing in general, about the father of remote viewing, talked about how meeting the promise of remote viewing is important. What he meant was remote viewing needs to be able to not just sometimes, but consistently solve the day-to-day practical problems. Yes, it's an extremely powerful problem-solving tool, but the practical stuff is what's going to put it on the map. So my key target, and my friends and business partners certainly agree with me, in order to do that and get people to stand up and take notice, is the Forrest Fenn treasure, that treasure chest that Forrest Fenn has planted somewhere. And that I need to find that. And then...
What's that thing
audience.
Worth?
I'm sorry?
What do you think it's worth?
According to him, and I would like really like to meet him before he passes away, because that would be great. He says it's about $1.5 million bucks in terms of the stuff in there. But in terms of advertising for remote viewing, man, that's a drop in the bucket if I find that.
That's huge.
Then,
that's right.
Then people will really want to learn technical remote viewing. I'll teach you. There's a seminar in February, but it's a horse of a different color. It's primarily what I'm going to do is encapsulate on a Saturday all of the most powerful matrix search terms, the remote viewing cues, in terms of personal discovery, personal development, medical stuff, disease, military intelligence, those kinds of things. Summarize what we've learned over the last 30 years in terms of the really most powerful search terms. And then on day two, I'm going to teach, and people have to have a basic understanding of technical remote viewing for this for the meaning to be there. The context has to be there. I'm going to teach what has been a trade secret for so long. I'm going to start teaching people geofix. I can't take that to the grave with me.
You're one of the few people who does that.
It's a specialized tool. It's very, very specialized, and I need to sit down with people one-on-one in the professional development course and in the workshop with people who have been to many of my courses. They will easily understand the concept behind geofix, including how I solved this so-called displacement problem. But it's still specialized enough, or they've got to watch me do it myself before, and then go home and practice.
How many students, Ed, do you think you've trained in your career?
In terms of military and civilians, one-on-one and in professional development courses, probably about, I'd say 200. In terms of workshops, probably about, 5,000.
I was going to say, you get at least 200 to a workshop, don't you?
Yeah, if I do. If I really push it, I'll get 200 in a workshop, but... Yeah, it's been 5,000 or 6,000 people. I don't do that many workshops anymore.
And, you know, we've lost Ingo Swann. Russell Targ is still around. There aren't many of you left of that original program. Why do you think the government stopped it?
Well, they're watching me very closely.
Still?
It's been more than 30 years. It's taken 20 years to develop geofix, precision location tech, 20 years. But I'm the keeper of the keys. The originals who teach coordinate remote viewing or control remote viewing as they changed in terms of difficult problem solving, not to mention location, they're now 30 years behind the power curve. So, yes, they can give you a great experience. Paul Smith can teach you, very good teacher, but they're still 30 years behind the power curve in terms of solving intricate, detailed problems because they did not have to do that. I was the operations officer. I had to answer to the boss. All they had to do was do the remote viewing, but I had to set the problems up.
That's right.
So there's a big difference there.
Lots of callers rolling in for you. Dr. Doom, let's go to the calls. Joe in Long Island, New York, to get us started. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I had a couple of questions.
I knew you would call.
Yeah, how you been, man? Yeah, first on this insect apocalypse, which I don't know if it's actually true, but I've heard stuff, for example, in London and England, that they don't have any wildflowers for these insects, which are needed, such as bees, to pollinate plants, which in the process of their growth. So the ecosystem is disturbed to the extent that, like plants that we do need might not be able to grow. And also China is mining all over the planet. I'm a little curious as to what's going on with them. They seem to pop up everywhere to mine everything. And
that's pretty much self-driven. Africa is a good case in point. Africa is the big treasure. So China needs this. It has to have resources to survive, not just the strategic metals and rare earths and things like that, everything. So what they'll do is traditionally is go into Kenya or someplace else like that and say, look, we'll develop this port, this mine, loan you the money to do it, at which the poorer countries will jump right on that offer, and then the countries will default, and China will own the property in Africa, the mine or the port or whatever.
Which I think that's what they prefer.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, they move troops when they do that. They position their own People's Liberation Army troops when the deal is extended.
Ed, what are your thoughts of the Amazon forest burning?
It's only one of the saddest things that I can possibly imagine. It's what we're doing to this planet. This is one of the reasons I feel that contact is imperative, because these ultra-terrestrials, which I now know they are, they're not ETs, it's their planet too. So they've got to take some interest, you know, whatever it takes. I'll be a vanguard, or the Sasquatch is going to be a vanguard to tell people, look, this is why your planet is going to die if you don't stop doing this or that, and this is what you could do, blah, blah, blah. So that's my hope in terms of contact protocols.
Joe's other thoughts about the insects, that they don't have enough plants to pollinate, is that a big issue?
Yeah, it is. It's actually the insects disappearing if you look at the private groups, and this is on the internet, who have tracked insects in England for decades. They're very, very concerned now, and they made it public in the UK, and that insects are disappearing. And so is that just from chemicals? I don't think so. I think it's from Wi-Fi. That's my guess, because
Wi-Fi.
Insects are very small, and their anatomy, the parts of their anatomy, are about the same wavelength as a lot of the frequencies that Wi-Fi produces. God only knows what will happen when 5G pumps.
I was just going to ask you.
So I think we're frying the nervous systems of a lot of these insects because they're so small, and they resonate with these Wi-Fi freaks.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Lauren, in Livermore, California. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you guys?
Okay, thanks.
Good. Well, how are you, Major?
I'm sick.
My dad and I visited you on your farewell tour 2 years ago in San Francisco.
Awesome.
And for remote viewing. And I had a question for you. After practicing a couple of times, I noticed my intuition started going up. I don't know if that's a coincidence or if that had to do with practicing a lot more of the remote viewing.
It's actually it variable among people. When you do remote view, you second remote view, I'm not interested, and you should not be either, in any intuition whatsoever, just right by the book, you know, solid discipline too. But yes, and some people who are actually naturally psychic, it does really boost their intuition. I'm not naturally psychic, so that never really happened to me, I don't think. But, you know, I hear this all the time about these kinds of things. One thing for sure, and I know I mentioned it to you and your dad in all workshops, that if you learn remote viewing for the first time on day one, and you never have had dreams, some people don't dream. Do you know that, George?
Well,
they don't
remember their dreams, I would guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. But on that first day of training, boy, a whole calliope of dreams happened that first night. So you go into a theta state when the remote, your eyes open, all that, but it really opens this aperture up.
And the one thing I learned from you, Ed, in terms of remote viewing, is if you're sketching things, you don't think about it, because if you do, it ain't going to happen, right?
On the yes, without going into a lot of technicalities, but no, there's no thinking allowed in this. In the remote viewing process, stages 1 through 4, there is no thinking allowed, none. You are not allowed to think, just like you're playing the piano, a Mozart piece or something like that. If you start thinking about the notes that you just played or the drama of the music, you get caught up, the music stops or gets all messed up. So it's very analogous to what we do. Our sheet music is standardized, technical remote viewing procedure. No thinking allowed. The thinking comes later when you analyze.
That's right.
Data. And when you set up the search term, too. Gee, do I really want to know where Osama bin Laden is? Do I want to know if he's dead or alive? These kind of things. This is taught in terms of queuing. Three-part process, setting up the search term, executing the session, and analyzing the work.
What was the name of the movie? Was it Ben Kingsley who played you?
Kingsley played me, this wild card FBI agent, Suspect Zero.
That's right.
I was a technical advisor, and I have a cameo as FBI instructor. Tom Cruise wanted to play me, but he was caught up making Black Samurai in New Zealand. And as soon as he got back, we were putting the finishing touches on Suspect Zero. He jumped right into War of the Worlds.
Interesting. All right, who's up next? Justin is with us in Florida. Welcome to the show. Hi, Justin.
Hello, how are you?
Okay.
Oh, my God. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I love your show, Mr. George, and thank you so much for giving me time. There were two things that I'm so blessed to be able to have this opportunity. I'm sorry, what's your name again?
This is Major Ed Dames.
Okay, Major Ed Dames. One question for you. Okay, so I have been practicing myself remote viewing lately, and my goodness, I could go all night. I know we've got a limited time. But only there have been times I have found myself I've been remote viewing, like, you know, certain things. Like, I was able to remote view, like, a couple of friends of mine, you know, just seeing what's going on. And sometimes I don't even mean to do it. Sometimes I just find myself doing it. And one thing that I'm wondering is how can you speed up the process of actually, you know, getting yourself into that state of mind?
Well, in technical remote viewing, it only takes 2 minutes. The process, the procedures itself take you into high theta within 3 or 4 minutes. You could have been arguing with your wife or worried about something, but if you start a remote viewing session, there's so much of your operating system, your brain, that's caught up in the process, there's nothing left to worry. If you're worried, you're not remote viewing, you're thinking. And that doesn't happen after about 3 or 4 minutes into the session. There's no way to speed it up. It's like building a building. You dig the hole, pour the foundation, put up the infrastructure, and do all the drywall and the electric work. There's no shortcuts in this process.
Ed, what is it about remote viewing, about telepathy, that allows us to tap into what is out there and make these things happen?
Oh, that's the question about consciousness itself, which is, it's the grand question in terms of psychology. Excuse me. It deals with consciousness, and I certainly don't understand. I'm a technician. I am not a scientist. I am not a philosopher. Those guys have to figure that out. What I do is say, okay, here's what I can do. You guys figure out what it is. And, of course, I'm aware of all the working hypotheses and the current theories in terms of quantum mechanics and all that, but that's not my job.
Did you have remote viewing capabilities as a youngster?
No, not at all.
That came later.
Yeah, I would. In terms of having natural ability, like, for instance, Ingo Swann, Hella Hammett, Keith Arari, those kinds of people are born, their birthright, their psychic antenna, so to speak, is way long. For me, I was below average in terms of intuition. I had to work very, very hard over many, many years to develop psychic abilities, you know, the paranormal abilities. And by dint of my labor, I did that. For instance, I became Ingo Swann's protege by dint of labor. But Tom McNear and Paul Smith, to a certain degree, they should have been his proteges,
right,
because their natural talents were better than mine, but they weren't interested. Even Ingo wasn't interested in remote viewing.
Who trained you?
He went back to astrology.
Was it Ingo who trained you?
Yes.
Well, you had a good teacher.
Yeah, the best. A really hard-nosed teacher, but that's what you need. Because it's a very different animal. Nobody is ever... We learn about things by studying them in school. But remote viewing is direct knowledge. So it's quite... And you ask yourself, in terms of the first success that you have, you just describe something that is... you've never been, blah, blah, blah. And you're shocked. I was shocked because my ego went crazy. I had a huge ego. Still do.
Sure.
You can strap that on back after the sessions. But you ask yourself, how did I do this? What am I? What part of me was able to do this? So that is some really life-changing paradigms, personally.
Is it remote viewing or intuition when, for example, you're coming up to an intersection and you think that you can see an accident happening involving you, so you slow down or whatever, and it doesn't happen to you, but a car goes zooming by? It would have. What is that?
Yeah, you know, that's a precognition at work, but it veils itself as well as telepathy, even though they're very, very different modalities, very different. All those paranormal abilities are birthrights, by the way, avail itself of the same thing, consciousness. You just have to take consciousness and decide, what do you want to do with it? If you're an athlete, you can say, okay, what kind of I'm naturally talented athlete, let's say. What do I want to do with my natural talents? You can't do everything. So you choose, and then you enforce the discipline to become the best. Consciousness, whatever you want to mold it into, can do that. I chose remote viewing because I love it. And now I'm using it for prospective contact with ultra-terrestrials that live on the planet that could not have been found any other way.
Ed's website's, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And, Ed, this session that you have in February 2020, can people get to that from your learnrv.com website?
No, we haven't. I Am Remote Viewing Products hasn't advertised it yet. I just thought I'd give people a heads up. But we've got it scheduled for February 15th and 16th. And if people are interested in it, they can go to RV Products and ask there, or they could go to majoredames.com, where I recruit professionals and ask me questions there.
And Ed sent a picture or two to our website. Lex has posted it at the highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. So stick with us. We're going to come back in a moment with the Major with final phone calls here. Fast Night. Learn remote viewing. His website's again linked up at coasttocoastam.com. As far as we're concerned, don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, and also sign up for our free YouTube channel by going to Coast to Coast AM Official in the YouTube search bar or right at the top of the coasttocoastam.com navigation bar. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with our final segment with Major Ed Dames, Dr. Doom, the remote viewer. Doc, one of our listeners, Jerry, writes, and he said, there was an incredible solar eclipse in 2017. There'll be another in 2024 over Carbondale, Illinois, for about 4 minutes or so. Will that have any effect on earthquakes? What do you think?
I don't know. I have no idea without actually subjecting that particular event to remote viewing and looking at it vis-a-vis geophysical stuff. So I'd have to actually do the work, George. One thing I wanted to mention to you, I think you'll find it interesting, because Coast to Coast listed this new Russian study on the Dyatlov Pass incident.
Yes. Oh, you remote viewed that?
Yeah, I had a whole team do it. You can see our results in the go to learnrv.com, down in the communities, down to the advanced projects. We particularly focused on one of the people, Ludmila, and But her autopsy, and they are exhuming these people because of the new forensic techniques. But that,
yeah.
In terms of that, they're so advanced now to see what went down. But the original pathological results of her were that her rib cage was crushed so badly that the doctor said it could only be the result of something akin to a violent traffic accident. Not to mention the fact that she had her tongue cut out and those kind of things. Well, I'll tell you why the ribs were fractured that badly. Because the thing that lifted her up in the sky and sliced and diced her dropped her 300 feet or so down and smashed her ribs.
Do you think they were picked up by ETs?
No. This is this thing that Linda Moulton Howe has committed. By the way, where is Linda?
I have no idea.
I've been doing your show for 23 years now, and she just disappeared. Anyway, long ago would give me photographs where any reasonable person would say this is a result of animal mutilation. And it's something that it's just scary as heck. There's this jellyfish-like thing, and we don't know what it is to this day, that lifts these animals up, just dissects them and drops them back down with a lot of missing parts. And that thing apparently is what did that to those, maybe by mistake, since they're not animals, to those hikers in the Outlaw Pass. So
what a great
story.
That is
not what I want to happen to me when I go up in that mountain.
No. Let's take some final calls for you. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hi, Tom.
Hi, George. I'm very grateful that you accepted my call.
Sure.
And Major, first of all, thank you for your service, sir. And Major, a comment and then a very friendly question. In the world of remote viewing, it's effective, as you have proved. And that means that as far as the military, the State Department, transnational corporations, there are no secrets anymore. Compartmentalization is meaningless. And if you have intellectual property to protect that, well, it can be remote viewed. And so my question is, there has to be doctrine. As an operational officer, there has to be doctrine within the military, within the State Department, within transnational corporations that recognize that now we are in a world of no secrets, no compartmentalization. All things are on the metaphorical remote viewing table, so to speak. And so I'm curious, again, this is my friendly question, is how does the military, State Department, transnational corporations operate, realizing?
I can answer that question. The late Lawrence Rockefeller, to whom I've done contracts for him, atmospheric ozone depletion, projected consequences, and remedial technologies was one of the we did. When he and others like him, they felt that the internet back in the late 80s or early 90s was just a trivial hobby for the folks, us peons out there. But later he realized, and he said this in front of Congress, you can see the actual report, it's C-SPAN, where he realized that people are talking to each other and not listening to the major news outlets, which have a monopoly on the deep state's thoughts and control. And he realized this is a danger, and he actually said, you can find this on the web and YouTube, that this should be stopped immediately, that kind of thing. Well, if he thought that the internet was bad in terms of the word getting out there and the truth, think of how a quantum leap above that is remote viewing, where there are no secrets in the world. And by the way, I do not teach ethics at all. People have their own ethics. I have mine. When I teach my professional students and they go out on their own and I encourage them to do so, set up their own schools, I don't teach them ethics. They decide for themselves.
And I would guess, though, that most people who take remote viewing or remote viewing classes, Ed, are pretty well-intentioned. Is that a pretty good guess?
So far, we've had a couple of examples of it so far. But money really talks. And if some of these, I mean, NSA, for instance, when I worked at NSA, that's why I don't have a smartphone. I have a flip phone. I can take the battery out. Nobody knows where I'm at. You can't take the battery out of your smartphone. It, when it's off, it's on. We knew that years ago. So anyway, where was I?
Well, we were talking about things in general. Remote viewing. Yeah. If you know, people who are remote viewers are well-intentioned people.
Oh yeah, I was going to say that NSA, for the first time, we never thought this would happen. The ex-NSA guys about 15 years ago were bought by the cartels in South America. $1 million for two of them, and of course they knew all the ins and outs and how NSA was tracking the cartels and how we did those kinds of things. So that was their price, $1 million. The Russian GRU, the Russians during the old KGB days, they had a sliding scale where if they wanted to recruit a U.S. Guy, like for instance the guy that sold the TRW Talon Keyhole 11, KH-11 manual to two Polish operatives, the sliding scale was 1.5 times a guy's annual salary could get him to sell out of this country. But in case of NSA, where we never thought, because the clearances used to be so difficult, it was $1 million times two to get the cartels to hire them. So money, you know, money talks.
Edward Snowden wants to come back and face trial. He said, as long as I get a fair one. What do you think?
He's not going to get a fair trial. He'd be lucky if he makes it back to the States without getting Arkansas-ed or Jeffrey Epstein-ed.
Let's go to Monique in Sunland, California. Hi, Monique.
Hi, George and Major.
Hello.
So I have a comment and then a question intertwined with this.
Okay.
I've heard on this show a few times people talking about the case of Maitrice Richardson. Are you familiar?
One more time, please.
Maitrice Richardson.
The case of Maitrice Richardson. She was a young woman who disappeared in Malibu. She was arrested, not paying a restaurant bill, and then she was let go in the middle of the night. And then
I'm only vaguely familiar with that, and I deal mostly with children because but the adults can make their own decisions. Children cannot.
Well, what I wanted to ask is, 10 years ago tomorrow will be the 10th year anniversary that she disappeared, and the new sheriff of Los Angeles is reopening the case. He wants to do everything from scratch. I was looking online. There was one person who did a remote viewing when she first disappeared, well, a couple months after. The name is Baz Smith out of the UK. My question is, there's sketches here. This person is saying it feels that it was accidental, which is what one of the guests for George said last time, but I'm presuming that because it's being reopened that they're looking into it more. The case was pretty botched from what I've read. But my question is, so what would be the major difference in doing a remote viewing for someone who has just disappeared, they're out there, they may or may not be alive, as compared to, like, now, 10 years later, if somebody wants to do remote viewing, like, can they go back in time?
Yeah, it's not a problem. For me, I do this all the time, too. The first thing, right off the bat, instead of trying to recreate what went down, we do that later. Find the person, dead or alive. Find the person first. That's ground truth. That's ground truth, okay? So you find the person, then you go from there. If the cops need help, and usually they don't. They can put together, you know, what went down. But you can find the person in murder or murderers. The locations are the most important thing. Putting together what happened, that gives you nothing. The cops still have to find the evidence. The key evidence is the person alive or dead.
Yeah, they found her remains sometime later, and the residents in the area heard screams at night.
Then we would go right to the next step and put together her death. That's what we would do in technical remote viewing, all the elements surrounding her death, all the elements. But for me, using GeoFix, I would find the culprits, the perps, what, either one or more perps,
exactly.
And locate them now, like I do with the FBI and fugitives.
I remember the time you found Stephen Fawcett for us, the adventurer whose single-engine plane crashed in the Sierra Nevadas, and nobody believed you. That was associated with the search, and you were right.
Yeah, the we were going to go in and find them ourselves because I went round and round with it. That was the most expensive search in U.S. history. Yeah, and I was online with talking with the search coordinator in Las Vegas. No, it's impossible. He couldn't be in the Sierras because of that. I said, that's where he is, and that's where we're going.
That's
in.
Where he was.
Mm-hmm.
Josh in Colorado, welcome to the program. Josh, go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Sure thing. You're welcome.
Hey, Major, I got to admit, I first, my intention of this phone call was to criticize you heavily.
And that's fine.
However,
I don't want sheep. I want skeptics and objective people.
You know, and I'm super objective. And I got to say, though, just listen to these phone calls, man. You're one for the books. I have a question, but I suppose two issues. First, I feel that maybe the program that you were a part of was a counterintelligence program to counter what the Russians had going on at the time. And maybe you were put in the position you were because you're exactly what those people were looking for. You fit the profile.
No, we put together the program based upon the 10 feet tall syndrome is what we used to call, where the Russians are 10 feet tall and got to do something about it. And they were doing it. In fact, the Czechs even snooked the Russians into thinking that psychotronic generators work. That and the Russians bought that. And so in the States, we had to do the same thing and keep up with the Joneses. That's why the unit was born, but it worked.
Yeah, but it was definitely following the Russians, wasn't it?
Well, it was following them. The Russians really never learned how to use remote viewing. I went to St. Petersburg a few years ago to help them out with a terrorist case, and I gave them my DVDs. You know, I said, take a look at this. But they're still using psychics, the KGB extrasense team, now the FSB extrasense team, and I still help them out, those kinds of, but they never learned how to train this. When Russell Targ left SRI, and I won't go into the circumstances behind that, he went immediately to Russia. That one of his servers still has his original website in Russia, but thankfully, Inga Swan did not come up with his breakthrough until after Russell went to Russia. Otherwise, the Russians would have had Gordon remote viewing.
Let's go to Middletown, Ohio. Nathan's turn on Coast to Coast. Nathan, you're on the air.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mad Dames. I'm somebody who identifies kind of as an abductee. I've got a high strangeness experiencer. And I was inspired to call when you were talking about Travis Walton and that you had remote viewed that case. And I was wondering how hard it is to remote view abduction.
It's what we do is take the event itself. Let's use Barney and Betty Hill, the famous event there.
Great
too.
Case.
They
Great
didn't
case.
Go anywhere. They did not go anywhere except in their minds. There were two glowing white spheres outside of the car. Betty and Barney were in catatonic states inside the car, and they were being inserted, but not with a physical insert, with a whole drama. Being beamed into their heads. So they come back and say, this is what happened to me. Nuh-uh, that's not what happened to you. That's why I had Paul Smith remote view this event with this green fireball and this reaction on the Mesa Wall, because I knew enough that our senses are limited. Have a good remote viewer see what really went down, that kind of thing.
Ed, only have about a minute and a half left. I want to give you the chance for the last word. Do you want to say anything before we go to any final questions or anything?
Just the people should take a look at the preppingforthekillshot.com, because if they come to February 15th and 16th seminar, they still may have questions. I'll answer them there. That's it.
All right. And the Learn Remote Viewing DVD set still available, or did you sell out on those?
No. It's still available, but we're probably going to sell out of those soon. But it's still available.
Okay. Ed, take care of that pneumonia, okay?
Roger that. Thanks, George.
All right. That's Major Ed Dames. You've been fighting pneumonia for a while, so he did yeoman's work for us tonight. Up next, Dr. Shelley Kerr joins us. We'll be talking about Edgar Cayce's Egyptian Energy Healing. It's an amazing story. Her studies of the American prophet Edgar Cayce and those healing techniques that he championed during his trance sessions many, many years ago. Then we'll take calls with Shelley in the last hour of the program right here on Coast to Coast AM. We will be back in a moment. Don't touch your dial.